So Farhaj and I want to thank everyone for coming onto the podcast. It used to be called We Strive, the We Strive podcast hosted by me, Corey McCain, founder of We Strive. And now I brought on my co-host, Farhaj. Farhaj, want to introduce yourself really quick?
Hey ho, I'm Farhaj Main, the CEO of Canna and a super passionate enthusiast about building startup ecosystems here in the Midwest and Texas.
There you are. Yes, you love your startup. So we love talking about, we're not just talking about startups though. We're interviewing a lot of amazing people outside of the startup world too. Anyone that's created any kind of business or has grown any sort of brand, we want on our podcast. We've already interviewed some amazing founders from around the world. We interviewed the guy that literally ran, he was doing all of the online security for Bill Gates, and he was part of the Obama administration. And then he was like one of the first hackers at the CIA.
Wild.
We've interviewed people that have had millions in sales, $1 billion exits. So
e-commerce, Reddit, and Ed Hardy. I mean, it's been really cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a good time. So we're excited for you guys to be here. This is just the first season. We have a whole lot more episodes coming, and yeah, thanks for being a part of our journey, and hope you guys subscribe and tune in every week and enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to Building Fires. Bang, yeah. Bang. Yep, Dr. Eric Cole, cybersecurity expert, sold three companies, one for the tens of millions, one for $500 million, another one for $2 billion, and I think might officially be the first hacker at the CIA.
Seriously, though, I think he started CIA hacking. Like, we found out mid-podcast. We're like, okay, got it. Cool.
Casual drop. Know.
Yeah, worked for the Obama administration as a hacker. Worked for Bill Gates as a private, like,
cyber bodyguard.
Literally a cyber bodyguard, which is, like, that's a movie right there. That's incredible.
Yeah.
We don't need to say anything else. Just watch the episode or listen. Yeah,
it's dope. It's cool. It's crazy. Really cool. Eric is the GOAT. So
and if you don't think he's the GOAT, he'll take all your money and hack you. So
enjoy,
just
family.
Kidding. Just kidding. He's a good guy. All right.
I'm Eric Cole. I've been working in cybersecurity for 30 years, but I'm one of those unique characters that I'm not only a techie geek, that I love cyberspace, but I'm also an entrepreneur. So I've bought and sold multiple companies. Started off my career as a professional hacker at the CIA. And while that taught me some great skills, I realized I have trouble working for other people. So I left there and I've been an entrepreneur focusing in on cybersecurity companies ever since. Sold one company to Lockheed Martin for $500 million. And I was part of another venture that sold to Intel for just above $2 billion. And then I've been focusing on my own company now, Secure Anchor, and I'm on a mission. My purpose in life is to make cyberspace a safe place to live, work, and raise a family.
That's awesome.
That is the coolest introduction we've ever made.
That's pretty good. So I'm trying to figure out where to start. So let's start with cybersecurity for the CIA. How do we go from there?
Throughout my life, learned a lot of different lessons. And when I was starting off my career, I really wanted to be an architect. And a friend of the family, this was in the 80s, said, Eric, everything's going to computers. Why don't you major in computer science? And then if you do computer science, you can then do anything you want, including architecture. So that was sort of my first key lesson learned is always surround yourself with trusted advisors and people that are smarter than you, people that have more information and data. Then I'm majoring in computer science in college, and I'm like, I don't know if this is what I want to do for a living. So it was the weirdest thing. I'm sitting there. I still remember it was a Thursday afternoon in a Fortran programming class, and something told me, go to the co-op office today. Go today, do not wait. And it was sort of like I was possessed. So I left class and I go down to the co-op office and I walk in and they're like, oh, so you heard. I go, what are you talking about? They're like, once every 2 years, the CIO recruits on campus and they're recruiting tomorrow and we have one slot left. Do you want it? And I was like, sure, why not? So it's one of those things that if I didn't listen to that inner voice, if I didn't go in and trust it and I went a day later, I would have missed the opportunity because the CIA only shows up once every 2 years. So I did the interview. Things went great. They flew me down. I got an intern and I'm working at the CIA. And then this is the other big life-changing moment. There was an all-hands meeting And if you've ever seen any of the Tom Clancy or any of those movies that show the CIA headquarters, there's this big bubble that's called the bubble. And it's an auditorium that sits about 4,000 people. So I'm in there with 4,000 other people. It's super crowded, all hands meeting for the directorate. And they're talking about this new thing called the internet and how things are moving to the internet and we're going to deploy services on the internet. And me being sort of young, naive, and stupid, I raised my hand and I asked a simple question that changes my life. But when I raised my hand, my boss in the front of the room looks back and she's like, "What are you doing?" So she's like doing this wave, like, "Put your hand down, put your hand down." I thought she was waving to me. So I waved back and I continued to keep my hand up, even though no one else was asking questions. And I asked a simple question. How do we know these systems are secure? How do we know they're locked down? And they look at each other and they go, "That's a great question. Eric, why don't you solve it for us?" I'm like, I wasn't asking to solve it. I just sort of wanted to know the answer. So that brings up another key rule of life is even if no one else is asking questions, brilliant people always ask questions. Smart people know the right answers. Brilliant people ask the right questions. And that question changed my life because then I was given a task to figure out how to determine if a system is secure. And it turns out you can't. The only way you can prove a system is secure is by trying to break in. So I basically pursued a career for 8 years of being a professional hacker, learning how to break into any system that has a computer and that's connected to the internet.
Wow. So you were white hat hacking, right? Yes. Like from the get-go.
Yeah. Yeah. I was basically authorized to hack and quote unquote break the law. But that's what I tell people. I'm a professional hacker, but I've never, ever been in jail or broken the law. And I always joke with my wife that if I didn't have morals and ethics and we were willing to live in Venezuela, I can make a lot more money as a professional hacker.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to start, but I can imagine you know a lot about stuff that people probably shouldn't know about. So just from all the hacking that you've done over the years, that's crazy. So you do hacking for 8 years, which we could do a whole podcast on, and then what's the next step for you after that?
So this is gonna sound a little bizarre, but after hacking for 8 years, I got bored. And I got bored because it's easy. And this is probably one of the biggest misconceptions with cybersecurity. It's a lot easier and simpler to break into a system than you realize. I think it's been a while, but if my memory serves me correctly, I think my record was 37 minutes for breaking into a nuclear power plant. It might have been 36 minutes, but I think it was 37 minutes. And so it's a lot easier than you realize because you only have to find one vulnerability. You only have to find one issue. So after that, where I'm like, okay, every system has vulnerabilities. Any system can be broken into. I switched my hat saying, I want to focus on defense. And that's when I sort of learned my purpose in life. And this is another key thing is that's when I learned the difference between passion and purpose. I had a passion for hacking. I had a passion for breaking into systems, but passions change. And after 8 years, I was no longer passionate about hacking because it was boring, easy, and I always got in. But my purpose in life to educate people, to help people, to make cyberspace a safe place to live, work, and raise a family, that's when that came up. And I switched gears to focusing on the defense and building and starting companies in the cybersecurity space.
That's incredible. Yeah, I don't even know. Yep. No, that's
I'm still processing. That's so amazing.
I hear about these stories. I don't even know how hacking works. Can you actually explain hacking? Because I it doesn't make sense to me that people can just pull up a computer and start typing, and then all of a sudden they're in somewhere. Like, you know what I mean? Like, can you explain how hacking like works as like a general concept?
Sure. So I'll start with an analogy and then I'll switch it over to the technical side of how to hack and break in. So let's imagine that I was staying in a hotel and that hotel room was filled with gold. So I had tons and tons of gold in that hotel room and you wanted to steal my gold. What three pieces of information would you need to steal my gold? You would need to know the address of the hotel. You would need to know the room that I'm staying in, and you would need to figure out a weakness or a way to be able to get into my room. So, for example, you might go up to the front desk and say you're Eric Cole with a fake ID that you lost your key and try to get a key to my room. You might try to go by the room when housekeeping is there and try to sneak in the room when housekeeping is opening the room to clean the room. But you'd have to have some weakness or vulnerability. So really, it's that easy. If you wanted to physically steal gold, you need an address of the building, the room number, and a vulnerability or weakness. Well, hacking is the same way. If you want to hack a system or server on the internet, you have to find an IP address, an address of that server, and there's free public tools out there for doing that. You then have to find an entry point, which in computers is known as a port. A port is just like a door. It's a listening point that you use to access the service. And then you just need to find a weakness or a vulnerability to break into that system. And the irony today is you probably, if you run Windows or Apple or any of those operating systems, you patch your system. So the vendors release a patch, which is a way to upgrade or fix that software. Well, a patch is a vulnerability. And a patch is the vendor telling the world that there's a vulnerability. So there's actually public free tools out there like Metasploit and others that whenever a patch comes out, they actually release exploitation code for breaking in. So if your system is not up to date with all the patches, which very few systems are, you could actually download some free software and be able to hack and break into that system. And then once you have that system, you can access any of the data or any of the information on that box.
That's great. That's actually a really good analogy and an example because I feel like I understand it now because I just did not understand it before.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Everyone, when they hear hacking, they think it's like black magic voodoo, like you have to sacrifice small animals and smoke illegal drugs and stuff to do it. But it's really pretty simple stuff when you really just break down the fundamentals of what it takes to break into a system.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like in popular culture, you think of like those CIA shows where they have like the Matrix GIF playing on repeat on a desktop. Yeah, you know, Eric, I'm curious if you had any thoughts about, you know, recently what happened on Twitter with a lot of these celebrity accounts getting hacked and, you know, Bitcoin address being posted.
Good question.
Yeah, that was a pretty crazy scenario. And I think it had, you know, the states shook up for a little bit in most of the world.
Yeah, so there's two perspectives from that. One is we all tend to let our guard down, where we think, oh, no one's going to hack us, no one's going to come after us, even if you're famous like some of the folks that were hit in the Twitter attack. But they're like, oh, who's going to come after my Twitter account? Why would somebody do that? And we tend to let down our guards and forget some of the simple things of you need to change your password. You need to go in and set up if it allows two-factor authentication, monitor and track the account. And the biggest problem with Twitter, which is similar to a lot of these other social media platforms, is they don't have account lockout because they want to make it easy and convenient for the user. So if somebody sits there and they're trying to log into your account 20, 30, 40,000 times a day, it's not going to lock you out. And they can keep trying and keep trying and keep trying until they brute force your password. And the scary part with that is you have no indication with other platforms. And Twitter's now added a lot of security, so it's no longer true because they're changing it. But at the time, a few weeks ago of the attack, if somebody sat there and tried 30,000 times a day to break into your account, you received no notification, no information, or no idea that was happening. So somebody could sit for months upon months upon months and eventually hack and break in to these accounts. And that was sort of problem one, that we tend to get lazy and not keep up on our cyber hygiene of changing passwords and adding in the additional security measures that are there. The second one is, and this was a lesson my dad taught me, if a deal is too good to be true, then guess what? It's too good to be true. So it still amazes me how gullible some people can be. And I forget the exact messages, but where people would go in and get a message from, I think it was Bill Gates or Elon Musk, that says, if you donate $100, I'll give you a hug or something.
It was like $1,000 in Bitcoin and I'll send twice back.
Exactly. And here's the scary thing. People fell for it, right? I mean, it worked and people actually fell for that. And I crack up because this is no different than 10, 15 years ago. I'm sure you guys remember the Nigerian bank scam where, hey, I'm a prince from Nigeria. I have all this money. I'm kicked out of my country. If you give me your bank account, I'll transfer all the money to you. And people fall for it. And then you have people today going, oh, who would fall for that? That's so stupid. But then Bill Gates says he'll match your Bitcoin contribution. People are like, oh, that's got to be true. It's like, come on, right? We got to use a little more common sense when we're on the internet.
It's so wild. Yeah.
Yeah, I think my favorite, I have a personal story. I used to work at Rite Aid. We had a guy come in who from Spokane, Washington, bought a jet ski from a guy in Iraq, which is like, I didn't know that you would jet ski in Iraq ever. And then he bought it on eBay and the guy made him buy it through PayPal gift cards. And so he came in trying to exchange $3,000 worth of PayPal gift cards. And we're like, no, we're not going to take this money from you. So he just got scammed by this guy over in Iraq. And I was like, people fall for the dumbest stuff.
It's like the robocalls. It's like, do you really think the IRS wants you to pay them as an emergency through Target gift cards?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's like, John, you actually sound like you're from Bangladesh. Like, I don't know that.
Let's talk about your experience with the whole Bill Gates thing, because I don't even know how deep that goes or how not deep that goes. So can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I've been blessed with my experience and knowledge to have worked with a lot of people and help a lot of folks. And one of our lines of business that we have with Secure Anchor is Cyber Bodyguard. And the idea is high net worth individuals hire physical bodyguards and like professional sports athletes and movie stars, but they don't do anything to protect themselves online. So I've done some work for the Gates family where I've helped them sort of secure and protect their infrastructure, their home, and things like that. And probably my funniest story is, and that's why I have the Batcave at my house, which I'll explain in a minute. But I remember one time I'm at the Gates house and I'm talking to Melinda and she's like, oh, can you come back in 2 weeks and help us out with this thing? And I'm like, sure, let me check. So I pull out my pocket, and it's much better if we were video because you would see that I pulled out of my pocket an iPhone. Now, this was back when there was an Apple phone, when Microsoft actually had a phone, and I'm sitting there checking my calendar in Bill Gates' house on an iPhone, and Melinda looks at me and she's like, what is in your hand? And I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, what is in your... And then it took a couple seconds and it hit. And I'm like, great. I'm standing in one of the richest people's house in the world with his competitor's product and showing it off to his spouse. This isn't going to end well. They're going to find me like floating in Lake Washington or something later tonight. Right? This is going to end badly. So I'm just sort of like, oh, okay. I'm sorry. I put it away and say it won't happen again. And then just to tell you how cool they are, about 2 weeks later, I get a package from Washington, and I open it up, and it's a Microsoft phone, and it has a little note that says, please use this when you come to our residence, sincerely, Melinda. And she actually sent me a Microsoft phone, so now I have a Batcave where I have all the products for competitors. So now if I'm going to Apple, I gear up with my Apple gear. If I go to Microsoft, I gear up the Microsoft. If I go to Google, I got the Google. So my kids always joke, they're looking to go, oh, we can tell who you're going to visit based on which back gear I put on. So
That's amazing.
Awesome. Wait, so how long were you with the Gates Foundation or with the Gates family?
I did that for about 10 years, and then we got them very, very stable. So, I mean, once in a while, I'll get a call now or periodically, but once you get the infrastructure in place and the security and they're trained and all those things, then it's sort of self-maintaining, and we handed it off to their team of folks there. So I'll still get involved a little, but we probably did that for about 8 to 10 years.
That's amazing. I think this is a really interesting segue because, you know, you've had a pretty star-studded career track, you know, everything from hacking at the CIA to being a cyber bodyguard for the Gates family. But you mentioned that, you know, one of the most purposeful experiences in your life were when you started off with your companies, and taking that leap of faith is a pretty big decision. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about your journey, starting your first company, you know, getting your first customer, which is a huge achievement always, and then working towards that exit.
Now, and I'm glad you bring that up, because whenever I do these interviews, we always sort of focus on the highlight reel of my career and all the good things that happened. But I will tell you, all the good things that happened and the things we've talked about are probably maybe 5% of the story. And the other 95% are the cuts, the bruises, the failures, and all those other factors that come into play that no one ever looks at. Because I always hear people go in and say, oh, Eric, you're so lucky. I'm like, really? I've lost millions of dollars. That's lucky. I've been told no hundreds of thousands of times. That's lucky. But the point is, it's your perspective on life. And to me, sort of when I started my company, my perspective on life was I believed in what I did, and I had a strong enough why that I wasn't going to give up until I found the yes. The analogy I give of how I approach my life is it's like looking at or doing a Where's Waldo puzzle. And I'm sure you guys have seen the Where's Waldo book, where it's a page and it's super busy and it's got tons of art and everything all over it. And somewhere in that picture is this little dude called Waldo. It's a little guy with a red and white hat, and he's somewhere in that picture. And depending on the complexity of the picture, it might take people 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes to find that Waldo. But here's the mind shift. When you're doing a find Waldo, you know the Waldo is in there. You know that it exists, so you won't stop until you find it. That's how I approach my business. I know there's a customer out there finding my first customer. I know there's a yes out there, and I won't stop until I get it. And the problem is most people, after 10 no's, they give up. Or after 20 no's or 30 no's, they give up. And they don't have that belief that they are so confident without a shadow of belief that there's a yes out there that they won't stop until they find it. And to me, the other thing I've learned early on is don't tell your dreams, your goals, and your aspirations to small-minded people. They won't understand, and they will put you down. My first company that I sold for, I think that was only $22 million, right, compared to some of the others, but that was for $22 million. I tried to get funding, and I had 27 different investors all tell me no. And I went to 913 different companies to try to sell the service and was told no. But most people after 5 or 6 would give up, but I knew that it was out there. And the 914th customer, they agreed to buy my product, but it had to be for free. And the deal was that they would serve as a reference for me. But I'm always looking big picture. I'm always saying, okay, one step closer, one step closer. So I took the deal where I made zero money. But it turns out the owner of that company loved it so much that another lesson learned, referrals are the best way to get additional customers. I mean, we went in, even though it was for free, we over-delivered on it. It was ridiculous. My staff was like, Eric, what are you doing? You're giving them so much, and they're not even paying you. I'm like, because we want to make this service so unbelievable that he has to tell every one of his friends. And guess what he did? And then from there, we got more customers, and eventually was able to build up the company. And then the other thing I will say as an entrepreneur is always focus on evaluation. I always hear these people go in and talk about, I'm making this amount of money and that amount of money. I don't care what is the company worth and what's the multiplier when you go to sell it. So this company, we were only making about $4 million, but we were able to get a 7x multiplier on it because we had products, subscription, patents, intellectual property, and so much other information. And I know friends of mine that were so pissed because they had $10 or $12 million companies that they wouldn't even get a 1X on it. They're like, how come we're making 4 times as much money and you sold so much more than me? I'm like, because you don't understand business, right? It's not the money. You got to play for the long haul and the long game. So when you're building companies, always think about exit, always think about who you can sell to, and always think about what are things you can do to increase that multiplier, because that's how you really make the money on an exit.
I had like 20 points and I feel like we'd take 2 hours to break down that sentence or that answer. But one thing I wanted to ask you actually was about going back to hacking. How has hacking changed in the past, like even 10 years, like from like 2010 to 2020?
Probably two big changes. So first big change is it went from more espionage intellectual property, like foreign countries trying to break into classified information, to really today, it's very, very financially driven. Almost all of the attacks that you see, which is a small percent, and a ton of the attacks you don't see are almost all financially driven. It's all about making money and cybercrime. I would say 90% of all the hacking we run into today is all cybercrime. It's all about monetary gain, and it's sort of like the cyber mafia. Second big shift is 10, 15 years ago, because there were more servers and the data existed on the servers, almost all of the attacks were server-based, where we would go after servers, we would go after information, we would try to target those systems directly. Once again, still happens periodically, but most of the attacks today are targeting the individual. Like we talked about Twitter a little earlier on in the interview, that was targeting the individual. I'm sure you've seen phishing scams. The big one today is... it says the subject line is COVID alert. It says three of your coworkers that you've been in contact with tested positive for COVID. Please check out the medical report to find out more details. Once again, emotionally driven. People are running out of fear, and even people that know better. I know cybersecurity professionals that fell for that. They're going to click on that almost any day of the week, infect their systems, and game over. So the second big shift is really focusing on users as exploitation paths, not servers.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, phishing is so prevalent, especially with something so emotionally charged. A lot of times their mind moves faster than we expect it to. Yeah, so... Eric, I'd love to know, so your first company, you got it sold at in that $20 to $30 million range. And then the second company, after you understood the fundamentals of the business, you went to embark on a new journey and you decided to take it all the way. You know, what kind of inspired you? I'd love for you to talk about your triumphs and some of the losses during that journey. And what's funny is, like, even with my last startup, it took me pitching to 293 investors before I got my first yes. And by the time I got to my first yes, we had to wind the company down because our competitors were just blowing us out of market. So I think there's a lot of moving variables that you have to account for as, you know, the founder and CEO of one of those organizations, especially in the cybersecurity space. And I'm wondering if, like, the previous relationships that you built for your first company really came to bat for you to help build up that home run.
Yeah, so a couple of things, Dave. So the first thing is, to me, in starting a business, there's really two types of businesses. You're either starting a small business in which you may be yourself or one person, and you're going to shoestring it yourself, or maybe friends and family, a couple hundred K, but you're not really going to get outside investment. And that one, you're going to grow to 4, 5, 6, 7 mil, and then hopefully get a good multiplier on it, but you can operate pretty quickly there. The second one is companies like over 200 million. And those are ones where you're going to have big product, big launch, big focus area, and you're going to go in and you need probably multiple rounds of funding. You need a round one of about 5 to 7 mil, a round two of another 20, then another round of probably 50 or 60 mil. And to me, you really got to be clear of which one you're doing. Because I find a lot of companies that either fail or get themselves into trouble, it's because they're trying to want to grow a $200 million company, but they're acting like a small company, or vice versa. And then the other thing I'm really big on, and I'm not saying this aligns with all the business books of the Google Boys and others, but to me, go in and secure your intellectual property and your blue ocean first, and then go after funding. Because like you said, what happens a lot of times is if you don't secure that territory and prove and get customers beforehand, not only is it going to be much, much harder to go in and get funding and investment, but your competitors can move in pretty quickly. By the time you get the money, it's going to be too little too late. In my opinion, unless you've built a couple of $5 to $7 million companies and learn the lessons and failed a few times and understand the mistakes, you shouldn't really be jumping right in, to a $300 or $400 million company because you just don't understand a lot of the fundamental rules. And the other thing, not everyone agrees with me, but the only way to have successful companies is to have some failed companies. So, and I, some young entrepreneurs get so mad at me, like, no, Eric, I'm going to be the difference. I'm going to be the one that's successful the first time. I'm like, okay, go ride home on your unicorn, right? It's not going to happen. You have to accept the fact that you're going to have to fail because that's the only way you learn and get better at a skill.
Yeah, I think Farhaj and I can both vouch that we have both already failed.
But I'm so happy we did.
So hopefully it's the second or third time around that we finally get that that breakthrough. And so I have written down here that you were the commissioner for cybersecurity for Obama. Is that true? Or I can't remember if that was correct, where I got that from.
Yeah, that is true. I worked one of the commissioners for cybersecurity for President Obama.
That is crazy. So can we talk about that? Or is that, like, how does that work?
Absolutely. And that's another one of my fundamental rules of business. And if you made me pick sort of my golden rule, it would probably be this, which is every time I've made decisions based solely on financials, solely on money, it's always turned out to be the wrong decision. And when I've always made decisions based on what was the right thing to do and what I felt is going to help people and make a difference in the world, it always turns out to be the right decision. And I gave that prelude because when I was asked to be one of the commissioners around cybersecurity, it was not a paid gig. It was basically, I was an advisor. I got to meet with the president. I got to meet with a lot of very, very influential people. But it was essentially, you had to start off as a volunteer to your position. And a part of me is that ego, right, that comes into play where I'm like, I charge clients $10,000 an hour and they want me to do, who do they think? And it's like, I had to sort of put it in check and step back saying, is this a good opportunity? Is this an opportunity to meet good influential people? Is this an opportunity that I can leverage later on in life? And because all three of those were yes, I took the opportunity. And as you can guess, based on the credentials and the people I met, it paid for itself 100 times over. And I didn't actually get paid for that initial gig. So it's one of those that I know a lot of times we're so focused on money, and how many G6s and Bugattis can we have. But in a lot of times I've really learned it comes down to doing the right thing that's going to position you one step closer, and the money always comes later when you don't focus on it. As ironic as it sounds, when I don't focus on the money, that's when it shows up.
Yeah, and I think that's an incredible opportunity, like paid or not. So, I mean, that's so incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess, like, was that what inspired you to start your online course where you help people learn about cybersecurity?
That was one of it, but to me it really comes down to, I always like helping people. I'm at my best when I'm up in front of a room. It's the most bizarre thing, because most people love parties and love cocktail parties. Like you go to a party where you socialize and you talk one-on-one with people and you mingle and you meet other folks and have a drink and this and that. Most people love that. That terrifies me. If I have to go to a cocktail party or I have to go to a social engagement, I kid you not, like, I sweat through 3 shirts, I hyperventilate, I can't stand it. One-on-ones, I just do not like. However, most people, if you tell them they're going to stand up on stage in front of 2,000 people, or you're going to go in front of the president, or you're going to go in front of Congress, that freaks them out, and they can't do that. And that I love. I'm just so relaxed and so comfortable. Cocktail party freaks me out. 3,000 people, piece of cake. I love it. So I'm just my wife always jokes, when I die, they're going to take my brain and study it for science, because I got some weird circuitry going on. But I just love helping people and love engaging and giving back. And with my online course that I'm doing now, the vCISO and others, a lot of people tell me I'm crazy, because I'm basically teaching people how to be competitors with me, how to start up a business similar to mine. But I just feel so much the need right now with COVID and people hurting, just to really help and give back. And based on my philosophy, I know for a fact, you give back and help people and the money will always come.
No, I love that. And one thing I wanted to ask you was, like, what's the craziest hacking story you have that you can tell us?
Craziest hacking. But probably, we'll see if this fits. I'll see if it can come across because I'll have to leave out the names. But I was brought in because someone's computer was being hacked, and it turned out to be a professional athlete. A professional athlete that you would know his name if I said it, but for reasons why you'll see in about 30 seconds, I can't. But nobody gave me the background on that. They just said, listen, this computer's been hacked and somebody's breaking in. They're trying to blackmail the individual and blah, blah, blah. But I'm going in and I'm doing the forensics and the analysis and working on the system. And what they failed to tell me was that the reason why this very well-known professional athlete was being blackmailed because he was sending naked pictures of himself to various females all over the internet. So I'm on this computer going through and starting to recover the evidence, and all of a sudden, these images start popping up, and I'm like, wait a second, you're not paying me enough. And then they didn't tell me whose computer it was, and I'm looking closely going, wait a second, that's so-and-so. And I'm like, right, just scarred me for life, right? I still have nightmares about that. So it's one of those, now when I get involved with cases, I always make sure I ask a lot of questions.
That is crazy. Yeah, obviously I'm not going to pry into who that is, but I would love to know. that's so funny. Well, I mean, honestly, like, I feel like we could literally do this for 8 hours. I saw we only had 30 minutes scheduled. So is there anything you want to leave people with? Like, I mean, obviously, like, I can't wait to just take 80 different quotes out of this and post them. But is there anyone you want to leave people with, like anyone that's maybe aspiring to, you know, join the CIA or like fight hackers or anything like that?
I would say the biggest thing, and I actually have a poster above my desk. If we're doing video, I can show it to you, that it just has four letters on it. J-U-M-P, jump. And my big thing is jump. A lot of people sit there and they're at that top of the mountain. They see all these successful people flying by and doing well and doing successful and all these stories. And they're like, wow, they got lucky and this happened to them. And they were just in the right place at the right time. And to me, it had nothing to do with that. It's because they actually jumped off that cliff. Now, here's the problem. When you first jump, you're going to bounce off those rocks for a little bit. You're going to get cut up, which both you guys said you had some failed companies, so you guys have your cuts and bruises and broken bones. You're going to bounce off those rocks, and you're going to get cut up, and it's going to be super scary because guess what? The parachute doesn't open right away. But if you're willing to put up with the cuts and the bruises and the rejections and the no's and the failures, when that parachute opens, it is the most rewarding experience on the planet, and it is something that I've jumped multiple times in my career, and I'm hoping before the end of my life that I'll be able to jump again, because I'll tell you, the cuts and bruises lead to the best rewards. What I always tell myself is, the harder the journey, the more no's I'm getting, the more I'm getting beat up, that just means the greater reward at the end. So don't be afraid, don't run in fear, and this is going to sound bizarre, but the number one thing, especially to younger entrepreneurs or even entrepreneurs that are married, don't tell your dreams to your parents, your spouse, or anyone else, because anybody that cares about you wants to protect you and they don't want you to get hurt. And they know that if you jump, you're going to get cut up, you're going to get bloody, and you're going to get hurt. And they don't want to see that happen to you. So just out of their love for you, they're going to try to protect you. But the bottom line is, I always crack up because my wife's like, oh yeah, I supported you the whole time. I'm like, no, you didn't. Now that my parachute is open and you're doing well and you have all the things that you want in life, you now act like you support me. But in the beginning, you said I was crazy. Right? You said I was nuts. But the point is, remember, people that love you don't want you to get hurt, and they might not always support your dreams. That's why you need to surround yourself with other crazy, mentally unstable people like me who will support you and put you off that cliff.
Love that. Hey, Corey, yeah. Thanks for being my mentor friend.
I got you, man. I got you.
Well, Eric, thanks so much. This was an absolute pleasure. I think everybody listening are going to learn a ton about so many different parts of their own life and also building companies. Corey, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'll throw it to me. Cool. Anyways, I'll edit that out. That was awkward. Eric, this was so awesome. I mean, you've already accomplished so much, but like, best of luck to you. I don't really know what you're working on, but like, you know, keep being awesome. So we'll post this episode in a few weeks, and just thanks for coming on board. Thanks for all the probable like attacks you've stopped over the years, from the CIA to Bill Gates to the Obamas, and hopefully you can just keep protecting our world digitally online.
Yep. And closing notes, as usual, you know, Eric, this is your time to drop your handles and where we can find you.
So first, I just want to say it's been a true pleasure. I love spending some time with you guys, and this is awesome. If you're curious about cybersecurity, business, and things like that, secure-anchor.com. That's actually my company website for business purposes. But I'm always doing entrepreneur motivational tips. I spend 45 minutes every day in the studio just laying down content, and we put that on social media, and it's DRBLICCLE. So whether it's Insta or Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter, if you go to Dr. Eric Cole, DRERICCOLE, you can find a lot of my content and information. Also have a YouTube channel too.
Okay, awesome. We'll be sure to add all those links to the podcast and also to our socials too when we're posting.
Yeah.
Eric, this has been awesome, man. And yeah, excited to post the episode, and we'll go from there.
Sounds great. Take care, guys. Thanks so much. Best of luck and Godspeed.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, everyone, so much for tuning in to the Building Fires podcast.
Yeah, man, we're planning on dropping episodes every Monday, talking to some amazing guests and giving you the content you deserve.
Boom. Farhaj and I are so grateful for you guys. I can edit this.
I know.
Farhaj and I are so grateful for all of your support. If you can, please leave 5 stars and a review on your podcast app, whichever one you use. Farhaj and I would definitely appreciate it. I'm trying to get our little podcast SEO up.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, looking forward to seeing you next week, and we're excited to make looking forward to seeing you next week. We got some exciting guests for you.
Boom.
Guests for ya.
You scare me, curs.
Boom. Arr. Boom.